a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
And we have Olivier Joutel in the studio here to talk about capitalism and AI. How's your morning going?
Morena, Zach. Hey, I got to let the good people know that you have a James Caan thief tattoo your arm. That's insane. That's respect. I love that movie.
Yeah.
That's an absolute. People like Ryan Gosling and Drive. No, like, this is the ultimate sort of stylized, like, gangster sentimental film. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a weepy, it's like a soft boy gangster film.
Basically,
yeah.
Which I think is why I resonated with it quite a lot.
Excellent.
The better or worse. but yeah, your morning's going good.
It's excellent. Man. Thank you. It's nice to be in here with the, I don't know how many different generations of breakfast show hosts I've known, but it's nice to be in the Zach Thomas experience.
Oh, thank you, man. You've been here, you say Zach Thomas?
Oh, sorry.
Did you get my name wrong? Zach Hoffman.
Oh, my God.
Alrighty, great.
+1, -1, we're all sort of like, it's the yin and the yang.
It is the yin and the yang. I want to know, before we get into talking about capitalism and AI and Jathan Sadowski and all that goodness, you know, it is the summer school break at the moment. What do you get up to in the summer school break?
Oh, man, this is just time to catch up on admin and, like, complain research about not enough time for my writing and research, but that is also part of it too. It's sort of like embarking on your sort of next year's charting of like what you're gonna write, what sort of funding proposals you're putting together, and then squeezing all that in before the teaching begins, and then the teaching kicks off. And to sort of segue, I mean, one of the real challenges of the last 18 months or so is just how much teaching is about trying to hold the line on certain sort of standards of academic rigor and just not letting the AI inertia and wave just sort of sweep you away, because it requires a lot more work to, again, sort of hold this line of, you know, what are sort of fundamental aspects of scholarship, why AI is not that, and it's not the help or hack that you think it is.
It's actually a huge hindrance.
Well, if you really want to be a kind of, I don't know, if you just want to live the bot life, you know, if
hashtag bot life.
If the bot life is good enough for you and you can sort of fake your way into some sort of bot existence, then maybe. But at some fundamental level, somebody's going to want to look at you, your degree, your talents as reflective of the ability to create, think critically, originally. And, you know, we can debate on the sort of various degrees of how much AI can help you with your grammar or emails or whatever. But I think there's just in general been this sort of like, technology is there as our servant to make life easy and frictionless. And why wouldn't I always choose sort of the easy way rather than any sort of friction or tension? And actually, friction or tension, you know, it's a fundamental part of whatever learning, adulting. Sorry, now I sound paternalistic and annoying. I'll stop there. But that's something we still got to sit with, is that sort of tension.
Now, as a professor?
Oh, no, I'm a humble lecturer.
Humble lecturer who marks a lot of work, I assume.
Yes.
I want to know, is it very hard to determine whether something is ChatGPT-ified or not?
All right, so
or is it like more of a
what
scale?
Should I say? How do I? Okay. No, it's not hard.
It's not hard?
It's not hard. Basically, if you've got... All right, I'm going to let you in on the secret sauce here. Kiwi students don't generally learn grammar at high school. So by and large, their writing, grammar is a real challenge. Mm. Now, what does AI do? It smooths out your grammar and gives you sort of meandering, middling, corporate Wikipedia-style voice, which is banal and repetitive and very smooth, which is just not how my students write when they are using their own voice.
Yeah.
So it's not hard to detect. It's harder to prove in the sense of like, oh, I've got you dead to rights and I'm going to send you up for an academic misconduct thing. And because there's no sort of like real hard sort of rules here at the moment about this, and there are not sort of full legal foolproof ways of actually attributing students' work to some sort of AI, generative AI misconduct, we have to use different routes. It's like saying, okay, here you've invented a source that doesn't exist, right? Mm. Or you've misattributed, or you've done this other. So in a certain sense, it gives you an opportunity as a lecturer to like go back to basics about what academic citation and those sorts of scholarly principles are, mm-hmm. Which is good, but takes a lot of time. A lot of time. And so there we are. It comes back to the question of what am I doing this time of year, right, trying to catch up on all the research and writing I was not able to do because during the teaching semester, it you know, holding those types of principles become really hard. But yeah, and you know, in the last sort of year, in my own program, we've been sort of like practicing kind of like an amnesty approach of like, okay, you've done a little bit of a whoopsie doopsie generative AI. Let's talk about it, and we'll, you know, maybe you can resubmit or do this or that. You know, so we're not trying to like, you know,
be like, yeah, super punitive.
No,
I invested. No.
No, 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 no. But it after a while, it gets on your nerves.
I imagine a 3-strike rule could be a good idea, but
sure, yeah. Everything's up for there are debates right now, and of course one of the challenges that students have, and this is kind of like a new anxiety, is that there are not, you know, different programs, different rules, and it's weird because in some programs where they've said you can use this, students don't declare it because, you know, you can use it if you declare it, because they feel like if they declare it, then they're saying it's less of a work, it's a lesser work, so they don't declare it. You know, so there's this weird sort of back and forth here. Or I love the maneuver that the law school has done, which is to say you can use it, but you are not allowed in any way to violate the intellectual property of our course, meaning you can't feed it the course questions or the course content, because that's the other thing too, is that like that's our sort of intellectual property, our sort of our thing that we do, and feeding it up into the generative AI slop machine is then just taking our stuff and just making us a servant of Microsoft or OpenAI.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not pleased about that. So the law school has done like this great way of saying, yeah, you could use it if you could conceivably wield it in such a way that doesn't violate these fundamental tenets, which AI is all about violating and thieving and stealing our labor.
Yes.
That's the core thing that it's doing, which, you know, to Jathan's talk tomorrow, right? That's why the TEU, the union, is bringing him in to talk about this question of AI and labor.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's speak on Jathan for a second, because, I mean, this is a pretty huge thing. The Communication Studies Program, as you mentioned, the TEU and the Sociological Association of Aotearoa New Zealand have brought out the author and host of the podcast, This Machine Kills, from Monash's Department of Human-Centered Computing and Emerging Tech Lab, Dr. Jathan Sadowski. Now, why, can you explain in a few words, you know, how Jathan is a big get?
Oh, yeah. This guy, I mean, he's probably 10 years younger. I exaggerate, but he's a young guy. He's an incredible, brilliant young scholar who's been writing about ICTs and emerging tech extremely prominently for like over a decade, and in particular, Jathan has had a few sort of like key zeitgeist terms that are very useful for thinking about our moment of AI. One of them is this notion of, by and large, what you encounter, what's in your sort of news reports, and the great spectacles of AI you might see on social media are what he would call Potomkin AI. And that's the notion of like a Potomkin village, like and for those that don't know, I mean, like, think of the example of on the border of North and South Korea. There are these fake North Korean villages that are designed to create a sense of what North Korea is actually like, but they're just a thin veneer, and like it's like a Hollywood studio basically of an old West, you know, think of it like a cowboy movie, and they just have the veneers of that's like a Potomkin village. And so AI is this sort of hinting, suggesting at this grand new world or journey that we're all about to embark off into, but really, you know, there's human labor hiding in there, or there's theft hiding in there, or there's, here's a concept that I spend a bit of time with my students, or there's arbitrage. Like, trying to needle their way into vital functions of government and public institutions, and then locking people in. Mm. So it's kind of like the same way that like all government services are now locked into like Microsoft cloud platforms, right? So like our core like sovereignty and like business as a nation is sort of just trapped in the Microsoft cloud, right? You know, so it's that kind of just working their way in, and then once you're sort of we're completely dependent upon that, then AI can dictate or set monopoly rents and all that kind of stuff. The other coinage that Jathan's well known for is this notion of Habsburg AI, right? So the Habsburg dynasty was this
very incestuous
degenerative dynasty. And that's what happens as soon as large language models are fed on their own recursive generative AI data. There's this wonderful study in Nature. Nature is like the biggest academic, you know, journal, and they set up this recursive model of generative AI that's like fed on its own stuff, and the tests were about like asking it questions about architecture. And then by the fifth round, they asked it a question about Gothic architecture, and then the AI comes back. Prague is the home of jackrabbits, white jackrabbits, blue jackrabbits, pink jackrabbits. I mean, just shit like that. It's wonderful.
Hallucinating is the term.
Hallucinating suggests that it has a stable reality that it knows, but it doesn't. It's hallucinating all the time.
True.
Anyway, I'm getting into the weeds here. But basically, the top headline here is that we've run out of like fresh data. Like there's no more human data that LLMs haven't already been trained on. So like, so there we go. Our future is blue and pink jackrabbits.
Well, this is, you know, the whole talk is labeled a ruthless criticism of AI and capitalism. I want to know what is AI to capitalism and capitalists?
Oh man, that's such a great question. It's like, it's the fantasy of like, oh my gosh. If you're deep in Simpsons lore, I'm sorry, everyone. But it's like when Mr. Burns and Smithers run the nuclear power plant by themselves. Like, that's during the strike episode of The Simpsons. Sorry about that. But it's basically, it's the boss's fantasy of doing away with all the fussy little humans and being in charge of, like, their you know, rocket ship, and being in charge of Mars, and being possessive of so much wealth and collective human labor that is yours, and that fundamentally erases your dependence upon people, society. And that's, you know, obviously that's like a feverish fantasy. And it's not working, right? Like the reality of AI is that when it is sort of brought into and this is the other thing too. Like we've already had in sort of blue collar manufacturing spheres of industry, like really intense sort of like rationalization and mechanization and reduction of labor. Because that's at the end of the day, capitalists see humans as labor costs, and labor costs means less profit. Mm-hmm. So anything that you can universally apply to reduce labor costs and therefore put us out of work and destroy our lives and make our labor less rewarding, that's just like, you know, Scrooge McDuck mode engaged. But the problem is that so I'll give you really quickly. So the Upwork Institute is a they do research on this area, and they did early this year they did a survey of over 2,000 C-suite executives in American firms. So C-suite, that means CEO, COO, CFO. Boom.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, there we go. Yeah, all the C's, the big guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they surveyed 2,000 of those guys, and they found that, you know, 90% of them expect to make AI mandatory in their workplace, right? They then interviewed the people working in those same firms and found that 3/4 of the workers had productivity losses, meaning the expectation between what the bosses wanted and the reality of the work and the shitty tech meant that their work was harder. They were trying to work, they were working longer to meet these insane expectations. Ducks. And a third of those people also said, I need to get out of this place. It's fucking killing me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it just means shittier, stupider, more alienating work. And The other crazy upshot here, and why this is so important that the university adopts a really clear-eyed, critical position, is that the private sector is not really the revenue for AI products is actually really pathetic. So there's been like massive spend, so hundreds of millions of dollars. So this is what was famously in an essay by Sequoia Venture Capital firm, the $700 billion AI problem, meaning there's been $700 billion spent on AI chips and about $15 billion in revenue.
Ooh,
that's garbage. Those are garbage
that's
numbers.
That's like a negative 1,000% return
that's
or something.
It's like 17 to 1. So everyone at the uni, everyone in Judith Collins, just chill out. Be cool. This bubble, we're in the first phase of this bubble.
Yeah.
And we just need to take a step back and not sell the family farm, not hedge the family farm on the sort of digital magic beans that are being promised here, and just cool out and see if we've actually got something that's a little bit more substantive than like Clippy, like an office buddy, an email assistant. And do we really need to burn down all the trees for an email assistant? I'm not sure.
I don't think so. It feels like these decisions are being made like ideological reasons rather than actual economic reasons.
Ding, 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 ding.
Which, yeah.
For sure. Because it's so, the Scrooge McDuck fantasy is like just very, very powerful.
And yes.
We see it in somebody like Elon Musk who, you know, says... Yeah, all 8 billion human citizens will have one of my robot assistants, and we're going to live on Mars and all this kind of stuff. And, I mean, you know, he's still ticking along. There's something to that bluster that is able to generate wealth for him and his, like,
army of sycophants.
Yeah. But I don't know if it's, like, a total social vision that that we need to, as a university or as a society, subscribe to. Yeah.
No, I don't really think so. And a key part of this panel will be examining the excitement and hype that so often comes with AI, as we've discussed. As it seems to come through every online digital company platform, slash whatever. Twitter now has Grok, Meta has their thing, Windows has Azure. Do you think this Silicon Valley ultra-tech mentality will also infect most people, or do you think it's something that's going to be only reserved for those kind of entrepreneur digital weirdos?
Honestly, though, like, it's a new religion. And sorry, I know this is sort of like a cliche thing. Oh, wokeness is a religion. Everyone says X thing that I don't like is a religion. But no, literally, so much of the tech Silicon Valley sort of suite of ideologies, which includes crypto, which includes AI, also includes like longevity, right? Like live forever, get on your grind, I don't know, drink your own piss or replace your plasma with albumin or whatever. You know the guy, Brian Johnson?
Yeah, adrenochrome.
It's weird. It's sort of like a reverse adrenochrome type situation. But it is, there is a profound sense in our moment that we are all alone and we need to get on our grind and we need to exercise and we need to, like, I don't know, create a like AI crypto trading bot so we can all have generational wealth. Like there is a certain amount that sort of hustle grind set is like an ideology which says that there's no place for public institutions, there's no place for any sort of like regulations or social protections, and that's the world that makes us all sort of, I guess that's the bot life, right, that we started with. Like this is sort of like what you have to believe in order to just say yes, Elon, you know, make of the, you know, digital communications infrastructure what you will in your quest to take us all to Mars or something. Of course, the reality is we're not all going to Mars.
No.
And we probably shouldn't go to Mars. It's insanely inhospitable. I think it's so interesting that all the space guys like think of themselves as like miners, because mining is like the most brutal colonial extractive form. Like that's their view of the future. Is like
totally.
I will have like a plantation or a mining colony. Right? Because, so I would urge us to be extremely skeptical of any of these grand claims, because so much of these guys are just complete bullshitters.
Oh, they're just grifters.
Yeah, total
grift. And Mass grift.
It's never been a better time to turn grift and sort of social clout into, like, I don't know, like a crypto coin that you can then, you know, so we live in an incredible age where the grift has paid off for a lot of people. Chances are you will not get your bag through that grift.
No.
And that people need you to believe that you will get your bag.
You'll
in order
get
for them to yeah. get their bag.
Yeah.
That's sort of how this thing works.
It's all a Ponzi pyramid, whatever. It's all just a bit of a pump and dump, you know.
So my son once, he worked retail, and he told me of a guy who put in his CV for a job in retail who had amongst his hobbies, like, passive income. Like, I was like,
oh,
no,
God.
Dude, you watch TikToks about guys saying passive income. That's not actually your hobby.
Yeah.
You know? But that one sort of creeps me out.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's horrible.
It is really. It's pretty horrible.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the program, Olivier.
Hey,
that
man,
was great.
I love the Simonde backing track. I love the James Contat. I have to further investigate who Zach Thomas is.
Me too.
I'm sure he's dope.
I'm sure he's a fun guy.
Yeah.
But if people want to see you, well, yeah. Olivier, Jathan Sandusky, not
well,
you.
Well, whatever. It's all about Jathan. Tomorrow, Wednesday, 5 o'clock, Castle 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free public event. It's going to be a sort of panel and rigorous discussion about that. We hope we get a lot of... Listen, if you think everything I've said is like an sacrilegious insult to your AI god, then come please and denounce us and give us what for. But like, it should, we're really trying to encourage like this kind of intense... rigorous discussion of what AI is and should be here on campus, and also because a lot of those decisions get made at the top about what software and platforms, you know, we buy, and then, you know, that becomes rationalized. So we need to also let people know that there will be resistance to any AI imposition from on high.
Mm.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you for coming on the program.
Shot. Thanks, man.
Olivier has requested some Company Flow, a classic East Coast group from the 90s featuring the likes of LP and a few other bangers. Then we have Clowning Around. Then we have A Corridor with Barbara Else. You're listening to The One. Keep it locked. This is Zach Thomas for Radio 1.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.